The great thing about Rome going from a draft process to on the field now is seeing that, you know, whether it was him talking about plays or whatever it was in the different formal meetings and pro days, all those things. And then that comes to life when he gets into a new system and he's able to pick up an offense right away, really understand all three of the receiver spots right away. So he's not sitting there locked into one thing. He's really picking this offense up as a conceptual learner, which I think only helps him for down the road in the regular season when you start moving guys around.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. It's Tuesday evening. I'm Anthony Herron on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. First hour flew by because we have, I suppose, what could be termed as magnificent news with both Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze under contract with the Bears. They're not going to miss any work, at least not any legitimate work, you know. Maybe they missed a little bit of the introductory stuff, the glad handing, if you will, when all the rookies show up. But vets aren't even in yet, so they'll be fine. They ain't missed a thing. I've missed talking to my guy, though. So let's go out to the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Talk to my guy, Kenneth Davis. He's the host of the Under Center podcast with NBC Sports Chicago. Also his podcast, That Davis Show. You can find him on the X at That's Davis, and you can download the Circus Sports app today, by the way. Ken, what's happening this evening? How you doing, man?
What's going on, Big Ed? How are you doing?
I'm outstanding. The football season is upon us. Pads are going to be popping before we know it. Folks are going to be flying around, and some of the concerns, some of the conjecture about Bears quarterback Caleb Williams perhaps not being there by the time the vets reported this weekend, no longer necessary of concern. Were you at the point yet? Were you in doubt? Did you have any concerns about whether or not Caleb would have his deal inked?
No, to be honest with you, I didn't. I thought it was kind of a formality. I think that, you know, we've heard a lot of conjecture or indifference to Caleb when it comes to not having a traditional agent. And even to just go back to when people were like, well, he doesn't want to be here in Chicago. And for the most part, I'm sure there was some betting as him finding out the direction of the franchise. But it's been untrue. You know this, and that's why I always like talking to you, being a vet. Nowadays, everything is slotted. This isn't the Sam Bradford. I think Sam Bradford was like the last QB to get the big $50 million. You know, for anybody that doesn't remember, about 15 years ago, the NFL slotted the draft order. So you can't just bargain and get more money. So, no, I wasn't really that worried. It definitely, you know, from afar, seems like someone that wants to make sure that he's there and he's prepared to hit the ground running. I mean, when you look at, and I don't know if they would have made all these moves offensively had they stayed pat at quarterback. And I could be wrong. This is just my opinion. But when you look at the moves that they made to kind of make sure that his transition into the pros was going to be as smooth as possible, I don't see him delaying it. And again, like I said, and it's just my opinion.
What do you think is a reasonable approach for Shane Waldron? Because Caleb Williams is immensely talented as a passer, and the skill position talent he'll have access to between DeAndre Swift as a running back, DJ Keenan and Rome at receivers, Cole Kmet, and we should not forget to mention Gerald Everett as pass-catching tight end. So there's a lot of guys who, if he feeds the football to them, can do things in the open field, running after catch, getting it into the paint. But he's also a rookie. And so, you know, you got a rookie quarterback you're working with. How should Shane Waldron go about sort of, you know, do you anticipate he'll be easing Caleb Williams into this thing, or will he just sort of, in a way, throw him into the deep end and see how many points the Bears can put up?
I think it's the former rather than the latter. It just makes sense not to overburden him with too much. Or even if you're going to overburden him, let it be during preseason to kind of see where he's at. But I don't think they want to have a situation where he's stagnant when it comes to his development. And the thing is, you named all the reasons why you don't have to rush him. They have weapons. Like, take advantage of the fact that if you're sitting there and you're playing three wide, you have three nice receivers right now. I can't even really name a last time the Bears had three nice receivers. A tandem, yes. You mentioned the tight ends. You mentioned Swift. Let's not forget Khalil Herbert. There's a lot of weapons. And also, don't forget the run game. You know, I know a lot of us had some indifference when it comes to former Bears offensive coordinator Luke Getsy. And it's funny, on our show, we had Carmen on for our 5:30 show tomorrow. And I know you just had her on earlier. And we were talking about Luke Getsy and the difference between Shane Waldron. And I was bringing up the fact that Luke Getsy was a hard-running guy. Now, sometimes we didn't like the situation. It felt like he took advantage of it situationally. But also, it was the fact that you had an athletic quarterback, so it allowed the team to be one of the best running teams. I think you stick with that. You don't have to come and go hero ball or ask Caleb to play hero ball right away. And also, with the schedule being the easier side of the schedule at the beginning of the season, you would hope with that defense he shouldn't really have to play hero ball that much. But again, the good part is they have the weapons if they have to get into a shootout because the defense may have a bad Sunday.
You never know when that might happen. And part of what can aid that defense, and you made it a point to talk about the depth at running back. How do you evaluate the depth chart that is in the backfield? I mean, DeAndre Swift is the guy who's gotten the contract. And so, you know, it's not one of the top paid running backs in football, but he's certainly getting paid like a starting running back. They went out, got him, and he's a talented guy. But you still have, you know, there were high hopes for Roshan Johnson for some of the things he showed early last season before the concussion. And it's in the not too distant past, but Khalil Herbert was viewed as a guy who could maybe be the running back of the future for the Chicago Bears. When you look at that depth chart in the backfield, is it no doubt where DeAndre Swift is the volume guy, or do you still think there's a major role available for Johnson and or Herbert?
I think DeAndre Swift will, I would say, probably at least, I would hope, get 14 to 15 touches a game. Now, that could be in a passing game also. I think we just live in an NFL where you're not really going to have a bell cow, because one, teams want to keep their running backs fresh, but also running backs get injured. I mean, Khalil Herbert, and I think one of the good things about bringing in DeAndre Swift was you kind of kept Khalil Herbert as the change of pace guy. And definitely we know that there are some games that you can lean on him as a starter, but he's best used to take advantage of change of pace and to gadget team. My question will really be what's going to be the development of Roshan. You look at Khalil Herbert entering the last year of his rookie deal, so you would think that they may lean on Roshan a little bit more, looking at him to probably be a part of this team in the future. But I'll say this, I hope they don't do what they did last year, because last year, and I know it was special teams and pass pro when it comes to blocking for Dante Foreman, but a lot of last year prior to the season started, it seemed like they should have leaned on Deontay Foreman. And then you even look at the end of the year where they didn't even play him, and he was at times clearly the better of the running backs that they had in the running back room. I just hope they go with two guys majority of the time when it comes to depth. I hope you don't really try to do, we're going to get all three of these guys in if all three of them are healthy.
We had a caller a few minutes ago that was talking about he didn't list it as a concern, but he did mention the health of Caleb Williams as a quarterback as one of the things that he'll look to as far as, you know, this season, just kind of hoping he would get through healthy. And that does bring about the idea that the Bears, as a backup QB, you have Tyson Bagent, who for this stature he was signed in as an undrafted rookie last year as a QB, showed himself capable of playing, competing in the National Football League. That's a big deal. But you go into another year where Tyson Bagent is your backup, and you have a quarterback who's likely to move around and is still unproven in the NFL. Would it behoove the Bears to try and do more with adding another veteran to that QB room?
No. I would go with no, to be honest with you. I think we saw enough of Tyson Bagent to know he can provide you what you want a backup quarterback to provide you with in the NFL. And that's, you know what, if our QB goes down for three or four games, you can at least keep us at 500 or better. And I think right now, clearly there wouldn't be any issue in the quarterback room if they brought in a vet who had been a starter in the past, because people would know the hierarchy that Caleb Williams is definitely his team. So I don't think that is really a real issue with the team. But I think you got quality play out of Tyson Bagent last year, to the point where it's like, all right, we can run with him. And I just think you got to know who your emergency third guy is and can he get out there. But let's be honest, usually if you get to that emergency third guy, and I know people can bring up Joe Flacco from last year coming off the couch, the season's in dire straits if you end up with the third guy out there. And, I mean, again, we've seen it, but usually the season isn't going well if you get to your third quarterback.
Kenneth Davis is the host of the Under Center podcast for NBC Sports Chicago, and you can find him on the X at That's Davis. He also hosts the podcast That Davis Show. My guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, talking about your Chicago Bears. Most of the conversation that many of us have had about the Bears' defensive front this offseason has really had more of a negative connotation to it, because there's that prevailing thought that they should have added another pass rusher or three. And we're going into the season, and all right, Montez Sweat, that's the guy we're confident can get after the quarterback. Aside from the pass rusher, though, how do you feel about the Bears' defensive front, which on the whole returns intact and played really well against the run last season?
It's funny because this comes up on a lot of episodes where we made fun of Justin Jones the year before when he basically said, hey, guys, I was getting double-teamed. That's why you didn't see me perform well. But you saw when Montez Sweat arrived here and being a force multiplier, how it benefited Justin Jones. We used to call Justin Jones fourth quarter Justin or under center. And you saw him pop throughout the games when Montez Sweat joined the team. That's my biggest concern. When you look at him, Justin Jones being a three technique and what he could provide, and now you're putting so much on Jervon Dexter, and you're basically saying he has to be good this year when we knew coming out of Florida he played a different position and a different style of play. That's a concern to me. You know, we talked to his defensive line coach and the co-defensive coordinator there last year, and he said it was going to take some time. I would hope that that would just be one season, but I think, there's still time with, you look at how the Bears signed Yannick Ngakoue. There's still time for them to bring in someone, if not him, back. But the question is, did you really get out of him when he was healthy, what you expected? And I would say no. So, again, where's the pressure coming from with the head coach, de facto defensive coordinator, who doesn't like the pressure as far as sending blitzes? But we did see last year he did go with sending some pressure because they couldn't get to the quarterback. And it's a concern to me, to be honest. I think the Bears have enough weapons where it's not really like alarming. But I think when people keep talking about a top five defense, I definitely think they can be in the top 10. And at times they may pop to be in the top five, but I question if they remain throughout the season in the top five when you really only have Montez Sweat as of right now, because Jervon Dexter can have a crazy season. I mean that in a positive sense. He can have a terrific season this year. And if he has a great year, then this conversation, this part of this conversation is moot, basically, if he has a great year. But that's putting a lot on him. And listen, it's what he gets paid to do. But you're asking a lot for a player that wasn't doing this in college and only had part-time play last season.
Now, Jalen Johnson at this point, a made man. He's gotten his contract. He's gotten his Pro Bowl, his All-Pro nod, and everything else. The rest of that secondary, though, really talented as well. If you had to pick one guy who was in line for the biggest breakout season amongst the other young-ish Bears DBs, Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, Tyreek Stevenson coming off a really strong finish to his rookie year, who would be that guy? Who's the youngster that's in line to break out?
That's a good question right there. I mean, I want to go with Kyler Gordon. That's who I really want to go with. But, man, my heart, man, I'm telling you, I think it's going to be Ty Stevenson, man. I just think, one, let's also remember, he's still going to have to prove the teams to throw over to Jalen Johnson's side, because teams are not going to openly want to throw to Jalen Johnson's side. So they're going to try to feast on him in the first place. So he's going to get a lot of opportunities. So I would go with just looking at how he finished the season and some of those athletic interceptions. I mean, it's not like when I'm talking about athleticism with Kyler Gordon. We know Kyler Gordon is a freakish athlete. But I think Tyreek Stevenson could really have an eye-opening season this year if he takes another step.
Certainly hope you're right, man. I mean, and that's the thing. If they had a pass rush to go along with that really talented secondary, then you wonder, truly, what would the ceiling be? But it's kind of the inverse where you have these exceptional DBs when they're all healthy, which has been a little bit difficult to keep them all healthy together. But it seems to have aided this pass rush to try and make, you know, even more out of it, especially with Montez Sweat. And there are players there that did begin to emerge along those lines as the season wore on here. So I'll go ahead then. So we talked some offense earlier, kind of came to the defense. There's a lot of known commodities on that Bears offense already, but maybe if I confined it to the offensive line, it's had so many injuries and had so many guys banged up here. There is a lot of youth and talent that's there. Braxton Jones, a lot of promise as a left tackle. There's a reason they decided to stick with him. We know that Tevin Jenkins, he's got stretches of looking like a Pro Bowl caliber player. Darnell Wright, certainly a commodity as a right tackle drafted in the first round last year. If you had one guy on the O-line, you say that's a player in line to break out this season, who would that be?
Listen, I want to say Tevin Jenkins. I love Tevin Jenkins. But Tevin's got to stay healthy. Yeah. And that's just the truth. I can't come out here, got my guy, I'm not going to blow smoke. He has to stay healthy. Probably if, and I could be wrong, but if he was healthier these last couple of years, maybe he does have a contract in hand instead of them perhaps trying to find out is will he have availability, because you know that's the best thing you can have is availability. I'm going to go with Darnell Wright, to be honest with you. Looking at one, just the physical traits that he has, and just thinking about he didn't have a lot of time in Tennessee playing right tackle. And now looking at what he may do this year, having another year in the league and just the pedigree, I'm going to go. I want to say Tevin, but I think it's easier for me to say Darnell Wright.
All right. I like that call. It's definitely a good one. And I always like the opportunity to be on a call with you, my guy, Ken Davis. Appreciate you taking the time.
Appreciate you, man. I'm here anytime you need me.
All right. That is Kenneth Davis, the host of the Under Center podcast covering the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago. You can find him on the X at That's Davis. Go back out to the phone lines here. Open it back up to you at 312-644-6767. 312-644-6767. Had some really intriguing calls in the first hour. We're talking about the expectations they have now that Caleb Williams signed. Now that Roma Dunze done. You know the Bears roster is now intact. So as they open training camp, what are your expectations for this squad, for these Chicago Bears? You should know, this Friday, the Bears will report for training camp up at Halas Hall. The Score will have in-depth coverage of training camp to get you set for the 2024 season. Bears training camp coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. 312-644-6767 is the number to get involved in this conversation. Chicago, what are you now expecting from the Chicago Bears now that we know everybody is ready for that training camp that we just referenced? 312-644-6767. I am Anthony Herron. This is The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I don't know if anybody else out there, I saw it trending on the X on Twitter earlier, Prime Days, trying to decide what we're going to do. There's potential Prime Days deals out here, especially buying a new home, a lot of AV equipment that we're considering in the process of all these things. So I don't know, but we'll divert from the previous plan for a moment here. 312-644-6767, by the way. We're going to get out to the text line and also some callers as we continue talking about the Chicago Bears. 312-644-6767. But I don't know, Alex, if you're an Amazon Prime person or not.
I
guess it's essentially, it's kind of like Black Friday, just in the middle of the summer. It's like Black Tuesday or something like that, where it's like Black Friday on a Tuesday, basically, is what this Prime Day situation is. But it's Black Friday just specific to one vendor, to one company, one retailer, if you will. So I don't know. Maybe by the end of the night, we might end up participating in some of this and trying to take advantage. But it's hard to tell sometimes if it's a legitimate deal or not. You see these, you know, the electronics out there, and they're claiming like, we knocked this price down in this way. But if you haven't really been paying close attention, like I certainly haven't, I don't know how much that enormous television normally costs. So if they tell me this TV was $1 million, now it's only $100,000. I don't know if I believe that.
What a deal.
You know, like, yeah, it sounds like a great deal. Wait a minute. That TV is only $100,000 and it was $1 million last week? Then, hey, that sounds incredible. I got to hop on that. That's only 10%. But, you know, are they marking it up just to mark it down? I don't know. I have no idea how they tend to manage these things. I just know we planning on getting some stuff. So we'll get it. But back to the Chicago Bears conversation that was being had a little bit earlier and really throughout the show so far, coming on the heels of the news that Caleb Williams, he's got his deal done. Roman Dunze, he's got his deal done. So both top 10 picks, both players that are anticipated to be able to help this franchise reshape itself, help the image of the Bears now feel more modern. Alex and I were just talking in the commercial break. Alex Coon's a Hawkeye. I'm a Hawkeye. The Iowa offense, you know, Chicago area guy, Chicago area product, Tim Lester, now the offensive coordinator for the Hawkeyes. You know, talking to Alex a little bit about what I'm hearing about how things are going, how folks are feeling about the Iowa offense, that modernizing a bit. It became quite the running joke during the football season last year here on The Score in my various hosting opportunities or appearances that I would have as the Iowa offense was scoring bupkis, you know, getting just mushed in the face anytime somebody tried to get near the end zone over and over again. New Bears punter Torrey Taylor, the biggest star on the Iowa offense. Think about that. The biggest star on the Iowa offense was the guy responsible for giving the ball back to the other team.
Yeah, and he was for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
Yeah. It was something. It was something. While at the same time, the Chicago Bears offense wasn't firing on too many cylinders for a lot of that time as well. And so, of course, here in the city, prominently covering the Bears on the Big Ten Network and Big Ten Radio, prominently talking about my Hawkeyes as I'm covering the Big Ten. So I didn't have a whole lot of touchdowns to discuss between the two football organizations most prominently associated with my brand historically here, certainly these days. So that didn't help out a whole lot. But right now, both are in a position to enter modern times. Who knows? Maybe even the future. That'd be something. You know, I don't want to overpromise. I don't want to overhype. But a little motion pre-snap from the Hawks. Wait a minute, man. That'd be all right. I'd be down for that. A few open receivers for some touchdown passes. Now that would be something to go ahead and get excited about, whether it's the Hawkeyes or the Bears.
With the Bears, I remember I was before the 2019 season. There was a report that you sent out that you were talking to some people around the NFC North. I remember this distinctly, Ant. Mm-hmm. You were talking to some people around the NFC North, and remember, there was a ton of expectations going into that season for the offense.
Yeah,
and you're right. Like, I don't know. Everybody around the league is saying this is a gimmicky offense, right, where everybody's figured it out. Can the Bears just have an offense where they can get into a rhythm, show some flashes, and do what a normal offense does? And I ask exactly the same question for the Iowa Hawkeyes.
It doesn't seem like it should be asking too much, right? I mean, in modern football,
it shouldn't look that hard.
Right. Right. Been a lot of offense. I've been breaking down a lot of film of people making offense look really difficult in modern football. So hopefully 2024 is going to have things opening up quite a bit more for the Hawkeyes, for the Bears, you know, whether it's doing pregame, postgame, calling games, studio shows. It would just be nice to be able to go on there with a big smile on my face talking about all these touchdown passes that Cade McNamara has thrown, all these touchdown strikes that Caleb Williams has thrown. Cade and Caleb, what if it was happening? What if just both of them were just lighting up the night sky with all these touchdown passes? That'd be something. That would be a little bit different than what I've come to expect and experience with, again, a couple of programs, a couple of football organizations that are very closely associated with my brand. I talk about them a lot out of love, out of deference, but also out of professional responsibility because I'm assigned to cover them and to break them down. I know you love them just like I do, but it would be nice in 2024 if both of these football teams were able to be a little bit more modern, be a lot more fun on the football field. So having both Caleb Williams and Roman Dunze under contract, having their deals done, certainly should have the Chicago Bears in position to modernize, in position to look a lot more fun. I did reference some of the texts that were coming in earlier as we took some calls in the first hour of the show. It's worthy of correction, and I got to thank the 773 because I didn't even catch it in the moment. So we had one of the callers say that they were predicting an 8-8 record for the Bears because for most of our lifetimes at this point, for most of us walking the earth right now, the NFL did play a 16-game regular season schedule. So that's kind of the record that rolls off the tongue still pretty easily for many of us at this point who are accustomed to associating the regular season total of games with 16. So 8-8 is like, yeah, it's going to be a 500 team. So it was a quality call, but they did make the mistake of basing it off of a 16-game regular season schedule, saying 8-8. Good correction from a couple of different texters, actually, the 773 texter, the 847 texter, 17-game regular season. So unless, who knows, Bears forfeit a game, decide not to show up, the opponent decides they're just going to lay down and not play football that day, it's going to be a 17-game record, 8-8, not a legitimate possibility. So did the caller mean 8-9? Did the caller mean 9-8? The world may never know. But 17-game schedule, you're not going to see an 8-8 record from the Chicago Bears. That's all good, though. But roughly around that 500 mark, that's been where I've sort of been at with my expectations for this squad, thinking that kind of plus or minus the 8-9 win range to me should be the floor for the Bears, assuming health this season. And if that happens, that certainly won't guarantee them any sort of playoff possibilities here. A couple other texters, though, had bigger expectations. The 815 texts in, expecting at least 11-6. At least 11-6. Now, if you're going beyond 11-6, if you're saying 11-6 is the floor for the Bears this season, but if you're thinking 12-5 is a possibility, 13-4, man, that's going to be one of the top teams in football, one of the top organizations. There's going to be all kind of awards getting won. You're talking Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, which apparently Matt Eberflus is the betting odds favorite for NFL Coach of the Year, Executive of the Year. Now, we've seen this movie before. We saw Matt Nagy win Coach of the Year. We saw Ryan Pace win Executive of the Year. So, I mean, it hadn't been too long since the Bears have had all those various accolades in-house. So if you're going 11-6 or better, and just to finish up the text from 815, I'm expecting at least 11-6. The Bears should have had 10 victories last year. With the next Patrick Mahomes, they better make it to the divisional. I assume that's supposed to read the divisional round. Oh, big hopes, big expectations, big dreams. So the divisional round of the playoffs, or I will consider it a failure. So 11-6, divisional round of the playoffs, or the 815 considers it a failure. I'm not quite that strong on the Bears this year. I'm not so all in on the idea that they got to make all that happen. But I do think at least 500 or better. So you're not going to be 8-9 and be 500. So at least a 9-win, maybe a 10-win squad. That's the range that I see the Bears in for this season. And kind of in a similar fashion to the way I've discussed the Chicago Cubs and the offseason that the Cubs put together there, where I thought there was some very smart money being spent by the Cubs and, you know, in anticipation of some development for the young, talented players, that the Cubs had a division that wouldn't be able to run away from them. So I kind of felt like spending smart money without necessarily attempting to splash the pot, as my wife and I like to say, that they'd still be in position. The division ended up being a lot better than I thought they would be. Now, part of that, the Cubs ended up being worse than I thought they would be as well. Starting pitching, not so much. But I'd say the Bears, conversely, the Bears are in a division that I do believe has a chance to run away from them, whether it's the Detroit Lions, whether it's the Green Bay Packers, certainly some unproven commodities at quarterback in Minnesota, but the rest of the roster beyond two talented options at quarterback for the Vikings. But I do think this is a division that, because of how deep it is, like if the Bears win the NFC South, I'd say, man, the Bears got a chance to win this division. They're in the NFC South. They're in the NFC North, one of the deepest divisions in the National Football League. As you know, we'll get to this part of the calendar year, the MLB All-Star Game going on right now. Home Run Derby was last night, a little time away tomorrow night. But this can often be viewed as sort of the sports abyss. It does end up making me wonder a bit and kind of puts my mind in the idea of some of the guilty pleasures, if you will, that are out there. It had my mind hearkening back to some of the programs I really used to love watching as a kid. As a young viewer of sports, I was talking a bit last night about the level of tension that I felt in watching things like the Bulls and the NBA playoffs and the Charles Smith blocks and four blocks in 5 seconds and that whole scenario that played out in the 93 Eastern Conference Finals. But that was what I was most passionate about out of any team, even beyond my Bears fandom as a kid. The team I was most passionate about just as a kid growing up in the 80s and then really beginning sort of my youth sports exploits and passions in the 90s as the Bulls were just becoming the biggest thing on the planet. So all my tension, all my angst was wrapped up in the success and the failure of the Bulls. But there were some guilty pleasures out there, some things that were more lighter fare for me, if you will, that I really did enjoy. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I'll be curious for your perspective on that as well. Some sports guilty pleasures. I want to hear from Alex Kuhn on this. I want to hear from you out there about this as well at 312-644-6767. I know you are extremely passionate about some of the top sports that are out there, but as a viewer, maybe even as a participant, what do you view as a guilty pleasure from a sports perspective? And especially this time of the year, like I kind of fell down a little bit of a rabbit hole looking at a couple of these old videos from last night. I'll describe exactly what I mean. And one of these sports programs that I was hearkening back to yesterday that brought me all kinds of unadulterated joy. We'll get into that next. 312-644-6767. Your sports guilty pleasure. I will share mine next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Gladiator Arena in Los Angeles, California, here are your American Gladiators. Ice, Ice, Baby, Jedi, Blade, Do the Thunder Shake, Storm, Laser, Disaster, Power, Violet, Nitro. The Samuel Goldwyn Company presents The Games Begin.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It didn't get much better than that. I mean, as a kid, watching American Gladiators, now there were a few things from a television viewing perspective that, you know, I would just be glued to the television like I was with American Gladiators. Like, it was one moment, you know, a point in my life where like Muppet Babies would have topped that list, you know, as a wee lad. Certainly pro wrestling, like the WWF, before it was the WWE, whatever that transition took place was around the time where I think they had lost me right before. I think by the time I got out of professional wrestling, quote unquote professional wrestling, was around the same time that they were still WWF, but then shortly after that became WWE. But American Gladiators, I just felt like that was the pinnacle of like entertainment sports competition, where you had regular folks out there with these Herculean looking figures. My guy Mike Adamley was one of the announcers who was a part of the broadcast crew, one of the hosts of American Gladiators, if you will. I think it was Mike Adamley and Larry Zonka, if I'm remembering correctly. And the Gladiators were these folks where it was odd, because in so many other competitions like this, you would be rooting for kind of the civilians, if you will, like the normal folks, the people who looked, you know, maybe mildly athletic. But you had these people who just had like muscles on top of muscles. But the way they presented it all, the way they packaged it, you would actually root for the Gladiators. It was a very, like, just positive presentation of the whole show. For me, I didn't realize at the time that it was even a guilty pleasure, but it's how I would categorize it at this point, that American Gladiators was one of my great guilty pleasure sports viewing experiences, because I very much enjoyed the way that you would get to watch regular-ish people go out there and compete against the folks with the six-pack abs and the huge quads and the veins coming all over the place, the male and the female gladiators just walking out there. And yeah, they're just all kinds of roided up. I don't think there's, you know, any real conjecture about that. I'm not sure if it's slanderous for me to assume that the way those folks looked, the way those gladiators were looking back in the 80s, had to be all kind of PEDs in everybody's system. Every last one of them. My favorite, you know, for what might be mildly obvious reasons, Gemini, one of my favorite ones, had the receding hairline, kind of had the LeBron hair going. I don't know how old Gemini was, but he was the one that just had, you know, for whatever reason, he just struck me as a guy who just seemed like somebody you could approach him, seemed nice enough, but he was going to take your head off when the opportunity came. And the various competitions they would do, they'd have, you know, things where you'd have like the joust, where they were both, you know, both the gladiator and the normal person were like holding giant Q-tips, and they were on top of these platforms, these podiums. Or they'd have kind of they would end and finish with this obstacle course. The gladiators would have to kind of chase them down from behind. There'd be gladiators in the way sometimes, and they'd have like these, you know, giant like rubber things they would get to shoot at them from across the stadium somewhere. It was just so much fun. I don't know why American Gladiators left, why it went anywhere, but when American Gladiators was on, I was glued to the television every single time. I'm curious from your perspective, Alex Schoon, if you have, you know, something that would be viewed as sports competition. Now, I do feel like terming things as sports has gotten a bit loose over the years, especially because different sports networks would just put a lot of stuff on there with people sitting around doing different things, but it's subjective. However you might define sports viewing, is there something you would view as a guilty pleasure, Alex, that you really like taking in?
Yeah, I had a couple of them, for two different reasons. Along your same lines, remember Pros versus Joes?
Oh, yeah, right.
On Spike
Petros
TV.
Papadakis used to host that one. I remember that show.
Yeah, like, I think we need to bring that back. Like, I know it's dangerous, but with how
very
ignorant
much so.
The
yeah.
sports landscape of like discourses these days, like I got a great new episode. Can you block Anthony Heron? Like let's do this. let's get to it. And to bring home my I was like the sports nerd growing up. Stump the Schwab, remember that?
Okay.
One
okay yeah Howie Schwab.
Yep.
On ESPN, that was a good one.
Like one out of 10 shows, like they would do sports trivia and he'd win almost every single time.
Yeah Stump the Schwab, that was a fun one. No doubt about that. And just thinking of, you know, different ways of talking sports programming here, just kind of checking in. There's no score right now in the All-Star game, by the way, in the baseball All-Star game. And I do notice, though, as I glance over at it real quick, just all these different players are mic'd up. And I can't imagine another sport where it would seem fitting. Now, it's one thing in the All-Star game that you've seen where they'll start to do it during some regular season games as well. But to just be having a conversation with the athlete while they're in the midst of competition. And you could, like, they'll mic up football players, but they're not, like, in the middle of an interview. You know, you're not gonna see, like, you know, one of the Bears linebackers, you know, who's just out there kind of talking to Adam Amin. All right, Bears are on Fox Sports this week. Here's Tremaine Edmonds. He's mic'd up talking to Adam Amin on 1st and 10. Giving out the cadence, making his defensive signals. He's the green dot guy, breaking the huddle, calling all his audibles. He got Adam Amin in his ear while he's mic'd up, just kind of having some back and forth while the football's getting snapped from the opponent. That would not happen in football. Would not happen in basketball. But in baseball being what it is, you can get away with that in that sport. But I would say that would be I understand the thought behind it. I suppose I see the pleasure that would be taken from it. So I don't know if I would necessarily term that as a guilty pleasure per se, having all these baseball players mic'd up, but more power to them. It certainly does provide a degree of access that you wouldn't normally get in most other competitive settings. Bring that up because we are going to transition into some baseball conversations, as all of Major League Baseball, including your Chicago Cubs, have made it to the All-Star break. We congratulate them on making it there, but still some question marks. We don't completely know what it means. We'll get an expert on the line, though, to help us figure this thing out. The Cubs beat writer from the Trib, Megan Matsumuro, she's going to tell us what she thinks the Cubs are going to do as they come out of the All-Star break. Some big decisions to be made over at Wrigley. We'll talk to Megan next on The Score.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Gladiator Arena in Los Angeles, California, here are your American Gladiators. Ice, ice, baby. Jedi. Blade. Do the thunder shake. Storm. Laser. Disaster. Power. Violet. Nitro. The Samuel Goldwyn Company presents The Games Begin.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It didn't get much better than that. I mean, as a kid, watching American Gladiators, now there were a few things from a television viewing perspective that, you know, I would just be glued to the television like I was with American Gladiators. Like, it was one moment, you know, a part of my life where, like, Muppet Babies would have topped that list. Yeah, as a wee lad. Certainly pro wrestling, like the WWF, before it was the WWE, whenever that transition took place was around the time where I think they had lost me right before. I think by the time I got out of professional wrestling, quote unquote professional wrestling, was around the same time that they were still WWF, but then shortly after that became WWE. But American Gladiators, I just felt like that was the pinnacle of, like, entertainment sports competition, where you had regular folks out there with these Herculean-looking figures. My guy Mike Adamley was one of the announcers who was a part of the broadcast crew, one of the hosts of American Gladiators, if you will. I think it was Mike Adamley and Larry Zonka, if I'm remembering correctly. And the Gladiators were these folks who it was odd, because in so many other competitions like this, you would be rooting for kind of the civilians, if you will, like the normal folks, the people who looked, you know, maybe mildly athletic. But you had these people who just had, like, muscles on top of muscles. But the way they presented it all, the way they packaged it, you would actually root for the Gladiators. It was a very, like, just positive presentation of the whole show. For me, I didn't realize at the time that it was even a guilty pleasure, but it's how I would categorize it at this point, that American Gladiators was one of my great guilty pleasure sports viewing experiences, because I very much enjoyed the way that you would get to watch regular-ish people go out there and compete against the folks with the six-pack abs and the huge quads and the veins coming all over the place, the male and the female gladiators just walking out there. And yeah, they're just all kinds of roided up. I don't think there's, you know, any real conjecture about that. I'm not sure if it's slanderous for me to assume that the way those folks looked, those gladiators were looking back in the 80s, had to be all kind of PEDs in everybody's system. Every last one of them. My favorite, you know, for what might be mildly obvious reasons, Gemini, one of my favorite ones, had the receding hairline, kind of had the LeBron hair going. I don't know how old Gemini was, but he was the one that just had, you know, for whatever reason, he just struck me as a guy who just seemed like somebody you could approach him, seemed nice enough, but he was going to take your head off when the opportunity came. And the various competitions they would do, they'd have, you know, things where you'd have, like, the joust, where they were both, you know, both the gladiator and the normal person were, like, holding giant Q-tips, and they were on top of these platforms, these podiums. Or they'd have kind of they would end and finish with this obstacle course. The gladiators would have to kind of chase them down from behind. There'd be gladiators in the way sometimes, and they'd have, like, these you know, giant like rubber things. They would get to shoot at them from across the stadium somewhere. It was just so much fun. I don't know why American Gladiators left, why it went anywhere, but when American Gladiators was on, I was glued to the television every single time. I'm curious from your perspective, Alex Kuhn, if you have, you know, something that would be viewed as sports competition. Now, I do feel like terming things as sports has gotten a bit loose over the years, especially because different sports networks would just put a lot of stuff on there with people sitting around doing different things. But it's subjective. However you might define sports viewing, is there something you would view as a guilty pleasure, Alex, that you really like taking in?
Yeah, I had a couple of them. For two different reasons. Along your same lines, remember Pros versus Joes?
Oh, yeah. Right.
On
Petros
TV.
Papadakis used to host that one. I remember that show.
Yeah, like, I think we need to bring that back. Like, I know it's dangerous, but with how
ignorant
sports landscape of, like, discourse is these days, like, I got a great new episode. Can you block Anthony Herron? Like, let's do this. let's get to it. And to bring home my – I was like the sports nerd growing up, Stump the Schwab. Remember that one?
Okay. Yeah. Howie Schwab. Yep. On ESPN. That was a good one.
Like, one out of 10 shows, like, they would do sports trivia, and he'd win almost every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. Stump the Schwab. That was a fun one. No doubt about that. And just thinking of, you know, different ways. I was talking sports programming here. Just kind of checking in. There's no score right now in the All-Star game, by the way, in the baseball All-Star game. And I do notice, though, as I glance over at it real quick, just all these different players are mic'd up. And I can't imagine another sport where it would seem fitting. Now, it's one thing in the All-Star game, but you've seen where they'll start to do it during some regular season games as well. But to just be having a conversation with the athlete while they're in the midst of competition. Now, you could, like, they'll mic up football players, but they're not like in the middle of an interview. You know, you're not gonna see, like, you know, one of the Bears linebackers, you know, who's just out there kind of talking to Adam Amin. All right, Bears are on Fox Sports this week. Here's Tremaine Edmonds. He's mic'd up talking to Adam Amin on 1st and 10. He's giving out the cadence, making his defensive signals. He's the green dot guy, breaking the huddle, calling all his audibles. He got Adam Amin in his ear while he's mic'd up, just kind of having some back and forth while the football's getting snapped from the opponent. That would not happen in football. Would not happen in basketball. But in baseball, baseball being what it is, you can get away with that in that sport. But I would say that would be I understand the thought behind it. I suppose I see the pleasure that would be taken from it. So I don't know if I would necessarily term that as a guilty pleasure per se, having all these baseball players mic'd up, but more power to them. It certainly does provide a degree of access that you wouldn't normally get in most other competitive settings. Bring that up because we are going to transition into some baseball conversations, as all of Major League Baseball, including your Chicago Cubs, have made it to the All-Star break. We congratulate them on making it there, but still some question marks. We don't completely know what it means. We'll get an expert on the line, though, to help us figure this thing out. The Cubs beat writer from the Trib, Megan Montemurro, she's going to tell us what she thinks the Cubs are going to do as they come out of the All-Star break. Some big decisions to be made over at Wrigley. We'll talk to Megan next on The Score.